I think we should probably resume as soon as we collect Commissioner Fish, who no doubt got frustrated with us being not back when we said we would be back. So we'll see if we can get him here, get back to work.
Commissioner Saltzman?
I kind of looks like it.
Somebody gone to get Fish.
Somebody gone to, hey, Rachel, somebody gone to get Nick? Okay. Rachel do her Sergeant at Arms act.
Yes. We should have one of those with a beefeater suit or something.
Thank you, Ben. Be here shortly? Okay. Thank you. Our apologies again, Commissioner Fritz and Fish, but we are back and we're resumed. And Mr. Walsh, you are on deck, so please come on up.
Do you want to call the next three?
Yes.
And we'll take Joe Walsh, Michelle Munt, and Charles Johnson.
Okay. Afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. We would like to fully support everything that Cop Watch said. We would also like to appreciate publicly the questions of Commissioner Fritz. We believe that there should be no police officers at all at a demonstration, none. So we take a very puristic line on this issue. It seems to me that if we started with that concept, and then moved and said, well, okay, we have to have security, we have to do this. If we started with the concept that these people are exercising their fundamental right to protest, and we should not interfere with it at all, no permits, no nothing. When you start with that concept, and then you move into, okay, these guys over here are getting a little bit out of hand, so maybe we need some police over there. There's another concept that you should consider, and that's between getting a permit and not getting a permit, there should be something else. Okay, in my 40 years, and I think I'd said this before, I never asked for a permit. I will protest, and if you don't like it, arrest me. That's my attitude. If I do something wrong, arrest me. Or if I choose to get arrested, knowing that if I do something to be the catalyst of that, then arrest me. That's part of the protest. Being a pain in the neck is part of the protest. It's not a parade. So you got that problem. You got to think about that part of it. You should never have rifles at a protest. Never. You should never have bicycle cops beating people with their bicycles. Never. You asked for some suggestions, and I'm giving them to you. You should never have military-type weapons, whether it's bombs, or it's grenades, or it's tanks. If you do that, you are the catalyst for the violence. I've gone to thousands of protests over the last 40 years. I have never violently attacked a police officer. Never. Under any circumstances. And sometimes I wanted to, but I didn't. 99% of the people that you have at the protest are nonviolent. And you have to believe that, and you have to trust it. You ask us to trust the police. You ask us to trust you. You have to learn to trust us. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Michelle Munt. Hi, Councilors and Mayor. What I witnessed about these events that you've discussed, Sergeant O'Day especially, is very far from what he's describing. And just one other thing. You kind of were saying they shouldn't do this or they should wait for that. And thanks, Amanda, for saying they just, when they want to go home, that's when they break up our protests. It's not about what's happening. It's they just don't want to have a shift change during the middle of it. I think I might have forgot my second thing, but, oh, they use us to train their militarization on. And that's not being said. And one example of training, besides the protest training on us, practicing their weapons, seeing how it works, letting the corporations make money from selling the weapons and stocking them up everywhere, wherever they hide all their weapons. Besides that, they train people on the spot with no formal training. The Plurton police train people out in the park by injuring my friends and bringing on the young new cadets and showing them how to injure them. And that's what you're not acknowledging. They train to injure between each other outside of the training system. It relates with crowd control because they use it again, making permanent injuries on people's arms, especially hands, stompings, and special moves to injure people forever.
Michelle, we have some new guidelines about training.
Guidelines won't work. That's enough for out of me.
I hope you take a look at them.
No, the guidelines won't work because the culture, that's, yeah. There's no, shouldn't be a dialogue. I'm just saying one-sided thing. They are not honest in any way to tell you what's going on. And it's okay, we're still talking. So let's just keep talking about everything.
Ms. Monk, could you just, earlier you were going to give us some comments about belongings. Could you tell me your experience?
I already said, we've been ripped off of our cell phones, computers, many items, anything they want. Jewelry. I've lost necklaces in the jail after a protest. They steal.
Is that the jail staff?
It's a repeated thing amongst numerous of my informants. I go to all the bum feeds, what you could call it, the soup line, whatever you want to call it. I hear it every week. That's why I say every day. And I've compared my notes with other people about the hospital injuries, and other people have given me more incidents, and it is every day. Because there's enough hospitals that's injuries by the police every day.
For the belongings?
I'm kind of counting the jail staff as police sometimes.
For the belongings, is it that they're just, there's
no
record?
They're ripping us off. They're thieves.
There's no record of them, or they're too difficult to get back?
No, just read the literature. Listen to the radio. Police are thieves.
Thank you.
Had a person tell me on the bus one day, a young black man, very capable. He said, he wasn't even joking with me. He said, I want to grow up to be a policeman so that I can steal other people's stuff. That's what he told me. He wasn't even joking.
Thank you.
That's what they're training each other to do, too. I have more incidents. This isn't the beginning.
Charles, welcome.
Thanks, Sean. For the record, again, my name is Charles Johnson. And it came up earlier about what is the actual procedure that we're dealing here with accepting the report. And I would encourage you to consider not accepting it in order to establish a good baseline for further specificity, because it doesn't talk about injuries that people have experienced from bicycles and doesn't address the equestrian policing, to which the best solution is simply to disband the equestrian police. It doesn't, I think, give broad enough look into the fact that individuals suffered from excessive crowd control. And there's probably still pending litigation going back then, and I know that policies have been revised. And rather than detailing, we all know that the city attorney successfully showed the world that it's okay to shove pepper spray, spray pepper spray down the throats of college-age women, and found some jurors that would uphold that. So Portland's probably not as great as we think it is. But under the new guidelines, after Thanksgiving with the Mike Brown, the failure of the grand jury to return a true bill in Ferguson, we've had a flashbang deployed in downtown Portland, and I think that y'all are on the ball enough that we're going to try and have higher standards for that so it doesn't happen again, unless there's more imminent threat of danger or something. Senator Ron Wyden left his house in Southeast to go to the Southeast campus of PCC, and protesters following the tradition of Dr. Martin Luther King felt that they needed to be in the street, and a member of Veterans for Peace and a mom from Salem were targeted by the police. I was in the basement of the jail to greet them when they were released, and just recently, this will connect with the fact that on the 5th or the 6th, the district attorney's office or the judge decided, oh, those people in Shemansky, we've been giving them the bureaucratic runaround so long, we can't provide these people with fair trials, never mind the legal shenanigans we've been pulling for 3 years. So I think that way too much of the city and the county's, the DA's office resources is being wasted because the police are escalating. So I hope that this conversation we had earlier about the mayoral discretion or the police commissioner discretion about getting involved, that you will look and say, it's not a good use of policeman hours to be arresting people at protests that have not caused injury, period. And also to have some conversations about good use of public resources in cooperation with Mr. Underhill about wasted time at the DA's office, that victims of sex trafficking and victims of violence aren't getting their cases due attention because you're doing these public policy things against people doing constitutional expression. So I hope that your office will look at both not having these arrests and hard gear staff deployments as much as you've worked on, but also you don't need to send police officers to testify to prosecute people who were part of traffic control for a civil rights march down 82nd Avenue. Those people do have counsel, but I really think that the best use of public policy is to tell the police department that it's not a priority for those people to participate in those prosecutions. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next.
Next three are Robert West, Trudy Cooper, and Teresa Rayford.
Good afternoon. I think you're first, Mr. West.
All right. I wanted to bring up the fact that...
Just put your name in the record.
Okay, my name is Robert West.
Thanks.
And I want to bring up, first of all, that I was there when they flashbanged. In fact, I was... three of them went off really close to me. And later on, I was involved in that kettle where they arrested 10 people. I was one... there was two people that were with Film the Police and one other media person that was arrested. And they had us in the East Precinct holding cells for over 2 hours, in which I had to be taken out by ambulance. And the hospital said that I was dehydrated. They have water and stuff there that just when you're handcuffed behind your back, you can't drink it. The officers decided that we were such a threat that they couldn't take the handcuffs off of us. How they came up with that, I have no idea. I'm 48 years old, and I got arthritis in my back. And for some reason, the police felt unsafe about me being out filming stuff, so they hit me with flashbang grenades. And they felt unsafe about me being in East Precinct, so they wouldn't take off the handcuffs. And to me, for the chief to come in and say that, you know, what he said... We're still missing a Film the Police riot shield that we know the police recovered. There was people that said the police recovered it, but the property room doesn't have it. Central Precinct doesn't have it. East Precinct doesn't have it. And officers that I know that was there that I talked to said they would try to find it, and they can't find it. You know, and the riot shield only stands from the floor about this tall and about that wide. So it's not something that you just put in a corner. And like I said, I was injured when they took me over to East Precinct. You know, they made sure that when I sat there and said that I want to take my Fifth Amendment rights and not say anything, they made sure that I wasn't going to be dealt nicely. In fact, when I first sat there and said, I need medical assistance, they sat there and said, I took my Fifth Amendment rights. They can't talk to me. And then about 5 minutes later, I go, hey, I need medical attention. And finally, an officer came up and goes, what's wrong? And when they took my blood pressure, it was what was that, 150 over 120. And the fire medic or fire paramedic or EMT or whatever that took the blood pressure said he needs to go to the hospital now. And the officer tried to argue, saying, well, we're releasing him right now. We can walk him right out the lobby and they can take him from the lobby. And I said, no, I want to be taken from right here. You know, I was feeling dizzy and I wanted to make sure there was reports done. I'm sure that wasn't reported to you guys. I'm sure there was no injury reports put down on that. And I've asked the police department for copies of the police report, and they're dragging their feet.
Well, thanks for coming today. Appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Do you have the records from the hospital from when you were seen? Were you taken to the emergency room?
Yes, I was.
And do you have those records by any chance?
Yes, sir, at the house.
I'd be, if you'd be willing to, I'm trying to think of how I can get them so that they're still confidential. Let me think about that, because, Mayor, I would be very interested to know if there was documentation at the police, you know, if this, thank goodness you were fine and that you're here to talk to us. If there had been an incident, how would we have looked at that? So thank you for coming to talk to us.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Cooper, I think you're next. So.
Hi, welcome. I'm Trudy. Hello, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm from the Elliott neighborhood in Northeast, and I feel very supportive of the report and the work group as far as it goes. I'd like to talk a little bit about how I agree with the people who have said that if you don't approve it today because it needs more refinement, that's what I would like to support. But there's two things in particular that I wanted to focus on and the assumptions behind them, and that's the issue, the recommendation of the hard gear and the recommendation about being publicizing more about approach and, in particular, constitutional rights, and I'd like to talk about the assumptions behind that and the relation between the two. First, I've been a protester for a very long time. I've been attending protests, if not organizing them, and it wasn't until 2011 that I saw the kinds of things that we're talking about today with the hard gear, with rifles being visible, with the kind of response. And, you know, for example, I went to almost every Jobs with Justice rally and march that existed. And at that time, Rosie Sizer was on horseback, and she knew all of us by name, or many of us by name. It was a whole different feeling. And I don't know if all of that stuff was there at that time, and I just didn't know it, or if it was in the background, out of sight, like the work group has said, which would be good. Maybe it was there the whole time. But what I really wonder is, when did that happen, and what are the assumptions behind it? Because as much as I support the issue of keeping it out of sight, definitely keep it out of sight, because it bothers protesters, as they said in the analysis, but what bothers me most is the assumptions about having it in the first place. Because it seems that in a democracy, there can be no higher value than protecting the citizens' right to protest, to get a redress of grievances, to assembly, to freedom of speech, as many have said, and other than life and limb, that's the main thing that they should be protecting. I think a very different message is sent with just even having that gear, whether it's out of sight or not, and the standard that you mentioned, Mayor Hales, of you know, when is it necessary? And I think that we really need to look at that. When I think it's necessary is that the standard should not be related, as it seems to be, to is there a threat of somebody throwing something through a window. It should be the standard of when it's necessary should be, is there any life and limb kind of danger involved here with protesters or anybody else? It should be people-oriented, not property-oriented, and not just control-oriented. And maybe they're making all the changes in that direction that we need to go in. But just in case they aren't, I think, you know, the assumptions behind it are very much sends a message that we don't have the right to be there. I mean, when you see that response, whether they've got the gear on or not, it very much sends the message you don't have your constitutional rights. Protesting is criminalized. We're expecting a riot. And that's not, I think, the message that the city of Portland wants to send. If that's the police bureau culture, which we've talked about a lot, changing police bureau culture, I think that is something to look at. I'd like to see that reflected in the report. I would hope that they would bring up more of those kinds of cultural issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Rayford, welcome.
Thank you. My name is Teresa Rayford, for the record, and just wanted to say hello again this afternoon to the commissioners and to the mayor. And I wanted to make a statement also just to say ditto everything that Dan said. I trust him impeccably, his research and his advocacy. And I also wanted to say that I'm very disappointed that Chief O'Day has left this conversation, considering he had an earlier appointment with the people from Cop Watch that really do keep us on the streets informed of what's happening here. At least if he missed that appointment to come here, I would think that he would want to stay here to listen to the voices of the people. And I'm not saying that he won't watch the stream or this video later, but I think that it would have shown considerable leadership on his end as our new chief. And in regards to two more statements I wanted to make, and one was in regards to the provision, Amanda and I had spoke to her about it before you guys came back in, but in consideration to the time when the police or anyone in a commanding position decides or deems that it is necessary for a protest to end, a protest is freedom of assembly by the people who have a constitutional right to do so. So I don't think that it's at any point an obligation for a police force to end that opportunity for those people to freely assemble. And so to be directed into a kettle because there's a shift change or for any other reason that they deem that our time should be up is a very unconstitutional violation of our civil liberties. Also, when we're dealing with protesters, there's a difference between protesters and rioters. Freedom of speech, freedom to assemble, freedom to take and occupy the streets because you're impassioned about something that is a world event and which we know now is a global event, that is our freedom also that a lot of people have fought for and that we've all worked to protect our parents before us and even our children after us. We would hope would have that type of integrity to protect that. We have to think a protest of people moving about because they're feeling a certain way is different than a riot. We had a riot the other night after the Ducks game. People were burning couches. We didn't burn couches. You know, you had a riot during Halloween out on the East Coast because of a pumpkin patch thing. That was a riot. That wasn't a protest. And so I think that when you talk about deadly force or some type of riot gear and things of that sort, you have to look at exactly what's happening. Is it a riot or is it a protest? Is it a deadly assembly? Is it going to injure people and not property? And then you make your assumptions based on that. In specifics to this issue that we're dealing with, one of the things that we've been dealing with since August when we had our first protest, people from the black community and communities of color were so scared to take to the streets that they didn't. They did one time, and then after that, they wouldn't anymore. We had problems internally with our white allies and our black community members fearing for their safety for being in the streets, fearing for their safety for being in front of cops. That is a continuous fear. If you haven't, check out the movie Selma. Research the stuff that not on the Hollywood version that happened to Dr. King and other people like Medgar Evers and people before us that fought for our rights. Look at how they were treated and think about what we're seeing when we are freely assembling and why we don't come together to use our voices. And then think about the outcomes that happen within our city and our nation when we don't speak out. And give yourself the opportunity to change that culture, because you are in power.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you all. Okay.
Next three are Laura Vanderlyn, Loretta Austin, and Laquita Lanford.
Anyone else after that? Looks like someone's not still here.
We can go with King Bishop Stiles.
Come on up. Welcome. Glad you're here.
Oh, she's here. Sorry. Can you hold on?
Oops. Sorry. Hang on. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Welcome, Mayor. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Laquita Lanford, and I'm really thankful to, like, be able to sit before you. I've never been able to take this opportunity to do this. I've always, you know, sat in the background and paid attention to what was going on. But what has really got me coming to visit with you guys, and I've met you several times, Mayor, over the last month and a half, and I feel like I'm comfortable enough to speak to you about some of the things that I've been experiencing. One, moving back to Portland last year, 2014, and I'm not a native of Portland, but I had lived here for 10 years, and so, like, I really believe that this city is like my city because it taught me a lot of good values when I was about 19 to 28 years old is when I left. And one of the things in that first segment of my life was about, you know, the culture and these words of diversity and these different things. And so I left to expand on, you know, just to grow as a woman, to grow as a person, and, you know, have all these different experiences in life. And so after going through, you know, all of that, I had been thinking about moving back to Portland. I have family that had later on moved here when I was here, or my mom is here now. And so those were things that I think I really needed to do. So I made that decision. I think within the first week that I was here, I felt like I was in another world. I felt like I had moved from Houston, Texas. I was in California prior to that, and I had spent 6 months in Central America in Belize. My family's from Central America. But I just felt like the culture had really changed of people. You know, like no one's speaking to anyone. You know, everyone is, like, going to work, and no one's paying attention. And I'm like, where are, like, the city has grown. It's a beautiful city to live in. But I just felt culturally we have, like, we've been separated again as people. And so as things develop, I mean, I kept asking questions. And I want to say that I did come down as a concern and speak to the police chief after something. I don't know. He's not the chief, but and I don't have his card. I have a couple other information, people's information that I gathered. But I was concerned because I live in a downtown Portland area, and there are a lot of homeless people that live in that area that I live in. And I think I proposed to you to really come out there on the streets and hang out with me for a day or two. And it's just really rough. And so what I had been seeing in Portland, which is public information, is Portland mugshots. And I just started to see a pattern of people, because at one time I had worked for Central City Concern. And some of those people that were not getting assistance, they're still living on the street. And I've been gone for 10 years. And I'm like, well, what's going on around here? And I utilize services from Transitional Project as well. I've never been in jail. I haven't been on drugs or anything like that. But I'm a community-minded person, and I'm an advocacy for the things of human rights. And when it affects me, I put myself in that arena to have an understanding about what's going on. And that's what had led me to this conversation. And, you know, really thankful for Teresa Rayfield and all of the other members that have came as members of Don't Shoot Portland. And I stand really strong with that mission that we say as a community action plan, because that's what we're doing. We're taking action in the community that we live in and want it to be better. It's not always about protesting. The first time that I actually had, I really didn't protest. I just kind of showed up afterwards by the Justice Center, and I was standing on the block, and I saw the protesters coming from around the backside, so I walked over, and I wasn't in no means way. I was there for supportive reasons, but I was just, like, standing around just everybody else. And after 20, like, maybe 15 minutes of that, I started to see the riot police, you know, box us in. They had taken off the bridge, and you're not thinking about it when it's happening. You're like, okay, well, maybe this does happen. I don't know. And I started to look at it, and, like, 15 minutes after that, it was the announcement of, everyone in the street is arrested. Everyone that's in the street is arrested, like, several times. And the riot police or the police officers start to push us in. Everyone that's in the street. So I was standing next to a car, and I got on the sidewalk because I wasn't really, like, you know, there were kids there. There were older people there. Like, the news folks were there. I was terrified. Like, I really thought that I was going to go to jail that night. I'm like, I just got a new job. You know, I don't want to, like, be, you know, not a part of that because I am here. And there was some information that came about. I know I'm speaking a little bit too. I'm just trying to get it off my chest, that I came down that Monday morning after we being, you know, arrested and everything. They did allow us to leave. I was scared, but then I was also empowered by the younger people that I saw, the young black women and men that were there, that we were all there for a reason to in solidarity with Ferguson as that indictment that happened, and it was just so fresh to us. That's what everything that was going on. And Loretta, she was there, and I didn't know this young lady from like anything. I'd never seen her before, but I was so inspired by her message and inspired by what it was that she was doing for young black people of color and for myself that didn't get that opportunity when I was 20 years old like her. And I got, you know, we got let go or whatnot, and I had to use the restroom. I was so nervous, and I went to Pioneer Square, and when I was coming out of the door, she was, like, just kneeling down. Like, she was frantic herself with the bullhorn in her hand, and I just comfort her, and we just talk, and I think everything happened for a reason in this life. If I had not been there for her and her being there for me, I wouldn't still be here because she was the person that encouraged me to continue to keep going with this movement. And as I've been a part of it, it's just been so many touching factors to what's going on with our population of people, of homelessness, of mental illness, and all of these different things in Portland. And it's just so hurtful that I'm collecting data. I'm advocating for homeless people at this point. I'm setting up a space for them to come, because they're not going to come down here with all their luggage and everything that they have, you know, to talk to someone that they don't know, that really haven't done nothing for them. So on my way here this morning, Leah, and she gave me her citation. This lady sleeps outside. She used to work for Monona County. She's 40 years old, and there were some traumatizing things that happened in her life, and now she's on the street. She wasn't an addict when she got on the street, but she's had to have, like, been in positions to put herself, to make herself comfortable. And the police officer this morning gave her a citation for her sleeping outside underneath the bridge, a woman that's 120 pounds, that's a white female, and that has already served the state of Portland many, many years, and she put in a lot of time and efforts and her energy, and she's willing to talk to anyone. And so she gave me the card, and I brought that, and it's just like as it happened. I've also been in connection with Sisters of the Rose to get that safe space with them, with also talking to Eric Berry, who works down in the independent police review, from that first initial conversation that I had to have had with them to make a statement myself, because like I said, I had never been in the process, but thankfully for Teresa and that follow-up, I was able to get that done and get that on the record, and so now I know what to do. And there's several pictures. I'm compiling a documentary about the homeless people, you know, the hiddenness behind homelessness. And it's not always about a person being an addict. You know, people want help in this city. But if they're having to be out on the street and women have to get with a man that they don't know just to have a pallet to lay down, and I get to go to a warm bed every night, Mayor, that's not right for me.
Thank you so much for being here and for coming forward and being an advocate.
Thank you.
My name is Laura Vanderlyn, and I just want to thank you for letting us come here and speak. Thank you, Commissioners and Mr. Mayor. I have been an activist for a while. I have been streaming live and following Don't Shoot Portland. And I'm disturbed by the disparity that I see every day between black people and, you know, in the black community. I've witnessed the police here in Portland treat, like, for instance, I'll give you an example. We were out one night, and there was an incident where a young woman took out a knife, and she threatened us with a knife. We were walking. It was a small group of us. We weren't protesting. We were just walking from one place to another. We were going to go eat. And a young woman took a knife out and threatened us with it. And then she was the one that initiated the call to the police. The police showed up. And they don't seem they just seem to be very, I'm sorry, I'm just at a loss of words.
Describe to us what happened. Just keep telling us what happened.
Yeah, well, what happened was this young woman, she was just wanting to, I'm not really sure what her agenda was, but she ended up calling the police, and it was really not a big deal. However, when the police got there, the police treated us with such hostility that it just kind of shocked me a little bit. When the police officer, and I have it on a stream, when the police officer spoke to me, he called me ma'am. When he spoke to Miss Rayford, and he seemed to know her by name, he didn't call her Miss Rayford, he called her Teresa. And he rolled his eyes, and he just wouldn't let her finish an entire sentence, and seemed just completely agitated when he hadn't even spoken to her. He was already agitated by the time he came up to speak to her. And they were under the assumption that we were protesting, and I don't know why they were under that assumption, because none of the officers really spoke to any of us. They only spoke to the young woman, and then they took all of her information. And I was just a little shocked because my skin color, I've never had that type of experience. You know, most of the time when a police officer approaches me, it's with some sort of respect. But to see how police officers approach my black sisters, it disturbs me, as my children are black, you know, and it disturbs me because I know my daughter, I have two daughters that are black, and I know that they have gone through a lot with police officers. I have one in particular who I remember, but this is in San Diego, this is not here in Portland, but it's not that different, you know, and what is happening here with the police department in Portland is parallel to what's happening in our nation. It's parallel, and I think if you really consider what is happening and really have consideration for your citizens, you have the power to make the change along with us. And that's all that I have to say.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi. Good afternoon, commissioners and Mayor Hayes. I would like to just put my name on record. My name is Loretta Austin, LauretaAustin. I also would like to put on record that I deserve more than 3 minutes because personally I am targeted by the color of my skin. So I'm not going to be running on any time frame or anything. I'm going to say what I have to say, and hopefully you guys will listen with an open heart and an open ear. I would first like to say that it's not the fact that black people are compliant and unbothered. It's the fact that they are fearful to come out and protest, fearful of violent arrest and unnecessary brutal behavior. We know this because there is a history of oppression when it comes to the African-American people. Also, I would like to specifically talk about the Kettling Inn incident that happened whenever, I can't remember, we've had a lot of protests happen, but it did happen. Specifically speaking, the night of the Kettle Inn and the mass arrest, police commanded people to get on the side of this, or get into the street, and that we were all under arrest. Without rights being read or a reason why we were all arrested, we were all massively detained and illegally arrested. As I encourage people to get on the sidewalk, the police officers arrested only people that were in the streets. So whoever gave them the command that we were all arrested and to get onto the street, it was very, it was, I don't know what the word would be, but specifically when we got on the sidewalk, we were not arrested or were not thought to be touched or to be put in the back of the truck and taken away. But they only arrested, the people that were arrested were the people that were in the streets. So definitely that. And also I would like to speak on the flash bombs and Portland protests in comparison to Ferguson protests have a reputation of a nonviolent and peaceful marches and protesting. However, the practices of the Portland Police Bureau are very much hostile and brutal. In no circumstances should police officers reflect a militaristic appearance and approach to peaceful protests. When I say that, we just led a a protest on 82nd in Southeast Portland. And as the protest and the march started, we started off with one police car on duty or following us down the street. And literally 2 minutes after, we had 10, 12 police, and it got hostile very quickly. Mm-hmm. However, nobody was throwing anything. Nobody, you know, it was a peaceful march, and it should have never gotten that hostile. Never should have got that hostile. Also, they were grabbing people, and definitely, it kind of just blows me how hostile these police officers can get, especially is because we are practicing our rights, you know. We're not doing anything wrong. We're practicing our rights. So definitely I don't know. I just feel as though with the absence of the chief of commissioner, O'Day, I feel as though what is the purpose of us coming together and putting our concerns on file if he's not here listening to these concerns.
We're here.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to make that known that he should probably be here next time that we do this, just because they do have a direct.
And also, he said in his recent, you know, he got sworn in last week, and he also said that he's here to make a change. You know, make a difference, and then we all got to do that together. And you're asking for community involvement, where the people of the community sit here, because we're not like all have been a part of protesting for many years. I'm only 38 years old, so like this is. I mean, I've had a lot of issues going on in my life, but this is the first time that I'm exercising and having an understanding of what it is that's going on. And so, like that type of hopefully energy, we can get him to participate in our community as he said he would.
He will. Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you all.
Thank you.
I'm very proud of the women in our community. Thank you for doing this.
The last two who signed up are King Bishop Stiles and Michelle Arata.
Please come on up. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead, Mr. Stiles. Put your name in the record.
So I'm King Bishop Stiles. I represent the Three Kings of Portland. Happy to be in front of you guys again. Thank you very much for your time. Forgive my ignorance, but I just need to ask a question. As far as this report is concerned, so your acceptance of it is basically an acknowledgement of communication.
The work group, the independent work group from the auditor's office and citizens put this report together. When we accept a report like this, it says we have heard you. It doesn't necessarily say we endorse every last piece of what you've provided. And in fact, in this case, in my opinion, and we'll talk more about this later, but there are things that we need to talk about beyond this report.
Right.
So this is a communication. Maybe I'm restating what your point was, but this is a communication from this citizen work group to us.
Right.
And we're taking it in with your comments.
Great. Yeah, I just, you know, I just wanted to make sure that I was completely clear about that. It seemed like there was not a complete understanding.
This is kind of an unusual situation, so reasonable question. We don't do this that often.
Thank you. So another question that I have is that in the acceptance of this report, will you ask for more specificity within the report?
Yes, we have the opportunity to do that, and I think you'll hear several of us do just that.
Okay, great. So moving forward, I just really appreciate your questioning, Commissioner Fritz. Awesome. I think that it's very important for us to know exactly where we stand and what we will and won't accept, especially in this sensitive area of law enforcement and exercising rights. I would like to comment on the fact of a little something that Chief O'Day was speaking about. I was at the protest where the flashbang happened, and there were three people that were agitators of that flashbang happening. I was pretty much like right there on the front line. And myself and the two other Kings were actually working throughout the protest to make sure that those people were known and that they were dispersed of without getting into any kind of physical confrontation. But it seemed that the police officers that we connected with didn't necessarily have an interest in making sure that they left. One of the things that spurred that flashbang on was an individual who I caught on camera dancing on top of a police cruiser. The other Kings and I actually had a discussion with this gentleman about, you know, how we were to proceed within the protest, and that exactly what he was doing wasn't appropriate for exactly why we all gathered. So I think that that's important information for you guys to know. On top of that, with a lot of bad information that you guys have coming to you, just to give you some good information into the fact that that night, when the flashbangs went off, I located myself in a position where I could be seen and perceived as non-threatening, and contacted officers that assisted two separate people in being able to retrieve their cell phones that were in a space that the officers cordoned off. So, you know, it should be known that there are those officers that are there that are respectful, and they are there and they are serving and protecting. With that said, in the vein of kind of this culture topic that's come up, it's something that we really get to look deep into. There's a statement that comes across that, you know, no matter where we come from, but especially in the issue of dealing with law enforcement, that there shouldn't be blanket statements put across as all officers being bad officers. But I think that it is imperative that we take a look at the fact that while there may be quote-unquote good officers, if there aren't procedures and definitive actions to be taken, put in place, that we all on both sides can hold each other accountable and see things as being transparent. If we don't have those things in place, no one is going to be able to see the good that's coming out of the policing that's happening and that we're wanting to have. So that's all.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Michelle Arata. Thank you guys for being here to listen to us. I am actually here to read a testimony from a community member who is not here, but first I'd like to speak on my own experience. I have a 14-year-old daughter. She's a freshman at Lincoln High School, and her friends we've been to many protests together, and they want to participate. They are vibrant. They want to see how the judicial to use their rights to free speech. And I have to call mothers, and I have to call fathers, and I have to beg, and I have to explain. They're not afraid of the protesters. They are afraid of the police. They're afraid of us getting arrested. They're afraid of how it might ruin their child's future. When I tell my parents I go to a protest, my parents are not afraid of the people I'm protesting with. My parents are afraid of what the police are going to do. And we've created this climate that protesters are evil. And they are not. Any violence I've ever seen has never come from my comrades, from my people that are sticking up for people who are oppressed, who don't have a voice, who have been marginalized, where social, you know, injustice has occurred. Mm-hmm. What we are there to do is to bring about knowledge and awareness. And we have been labeled as something to be feared, when in reality, the only fear I've ever seen is the actions of the police. And every time, if I'm not able to go to a protest and my 14-year-old goes, I'm still afraid for her safety, not because of my friends standing together, but because of how the police treat us. That being said, I'd also like to read this testimony from a community member. I was at the Saturday demonstration where there's a confrontation with the police. I positioned myself between two planners while I watched so I could have a safe vantage point to watch the police from. From my spot, I saw a gap between the police and the crowd as they withdrew. One member of our community was encouraging people to maintain the police line as they moved back. A small fringe group on the left-hand side of the crowd began to advance. Within moments, the police threw concussion grenades at the crowd, two clearly targeting the leader attempting to get the crowd to follow police instruction, and one or two which were thrown at provoking the group. I continued to watch the police as the crowd went into panic, and I was knocked off my feet by two panicking civilians. I stood back up to look back at the police to make sure no one was injured or in need of help. I watched as the police waited for the crowd to settle before charging the trampled and confused crowd. As I stood on the sidewalk, being mindful of the policy's request to vacate the street, keeping my arms non-threateningly placed at my sides, I watched on a group of police throw two members of the protest who were also standing on the sidewalk, who had not been provoking anyone, get thrown into the wall, and two of them were forcibly restrained against the wall by a group of about five officers. As I continued to stand and observe the situation, I was approached by six officers in formation. When they reached me, mind you, standing on the sidewalk with my hands exposed, I was immediately struck with a baton. The second time I was struck, I began to turn around. When I had rotated almost all the way around, one officer discharged pepper spray into my face. I was continuously struck in the back as I walked away from the police, made my way away from the police, and then handled the pepper spray situation. Additional comments here. In all this experience, there's very little logic. The police did not effectively disperse the crowd. The use of force was unwarranted, and their application of crowd control weapons was ineffective and seemingly misplaced. The police and this unjustified application of force caused more injury than the protest had created. One person, as a result of being trampled, had their shoulder dislocated. Many others were injured, and many more were placed in danger. The police in this instance represented the only danger to civilians downtown that night. The police on that day were responsible for virtually all injury that night. To call any methods they used forms of crowd control is laughable. Crowd control exists to prevent disorder and rioting, and in this instance, were nothing but provocateurs. I agree with that statement, and I would like my child's opportunity to protest to be protected and not a fear.
Thank you. Thanks very much. You all. Anyone else? Well, thank you all. I think it's an order that we take a motion. So if there's a motion to accept
the report. Move to accept the report.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Further discussion on that? Then roll call. We can make a statement as we do.
Fritz?
Thank you, everyone, for testifying, for the amount of time that you've put into clearly documenting your concerns. Thank you especially to the Citizens Review Committee, who put in hours and hours of oversight and good work. And so I appreciate that good work in accepting this report. I think I have learned a lot this afternoon, and I've learned that it certainly doesn't go far enough. I want to start out by stating very clearly that the Community Oversight Advisory Board, the application deadline has been extended until Friday, and we're particularly looking for people of color and young people to come and apply for that position. We've gotten over 80 applications so far, and we are still very much encouraging more. So if you or somebody that you know is willing to put in your application, the choices are made by a citizen selection committee. They are not made by the City Council except for one each. So there is that opportunity to participate very actively and intensively. It takes about possibly 10 hours a month, so it's a lot of work. And yet this is the most important thing that we're doing right now. And I appreciate all of the testimony. I am looking forward to getting the report from Mayor Hales about the policies that we discussed. The use of the concussion grenades, or the whatever else they're called, is new information to me. I was not aware that that's becoming a standard practice, and I'd like to get a briefing on what the policy is, why we do that. And we need to be clear that people do get to express themselves. They do get to assemble. We get to assemble. I have been to many protests in my life, and I want to be able to continue to do that. I want everybody to do that because it's part of who we are as Portlanders. It's part of who we are as a nation. And we need to recognize that we are doing some things right here, or at least we're not as awful as some of the other things that we've been reading about in the news. So there's that. We have recognized that we have problems, and we have committed to addressing them, and we're having this extended conversation. I appreciate you being here at the Mirror, allowing people to have their say, and the involvement of the Independent Police Review in the independently elected auditor's office is crucial. And we need to make sure that there's the appropriate checks and balances between the now independently hired compliance officer and the Community Oversight Board, IPR, CRC, and citizens at large to figure out what the questions are, figure out what the answers are, and make sure that we get it right. This report is part of that, and I'm appreciative of all the good work. Aye.
Fish?
Well, I want to thank everybody for spending the afternoon with us. Our day started at around 9 o'clock, and council started at 9:30, so we're approaching about 8 hours, but we're paid to do this. Each of you has taken time out of your schedule, your life, to be with us, so thank you. And I share what Commissioner Fritz said about the powerful testimonials and the information you've shared with us, and I thank you for that. The couple times the questions come up about what is our role in accepting this report, and I want to offer a qualification. There are some reports that we commission as a council, and if we don't think the report addresses the question that we've presented, then we have the authority to reject the report, and that's really telling our team to go back and do it differently. When it's a report from an independent body that is giving us advice, I think it's better form to accept the report, which is a ministerial act. It essentially means we're taking it and putting it in the record. But I'm not satisfied with this report. Now, the mayor is the police commissioner, and I'm looking forward to his comments about the areas where he'd like to see further work. But I think the record is pretty clear about the areas that need additional attention. And so this report, to me, is just a beginning. It is not the end, and I think it's incomplete. But I think it would be bad form to reject the report. I think the more respectful thing to do is to accept the report and to state our reservations and make it clear that this is a ministerial act. Commissioner Fritz mentioned the COAB, and my head is spinning these days with acronyms, but the Community Oversight Advisory Board. This is a big deal. This is a big deal, and we spent a lot of time, and we've had a lot of hearings over the DOJ settlement, what we're trying to accomplish. And so it's very important we get people who are deeply committed to this reform work. And it was my honor about 10 days ago to announce that former Senator Abel Gordley had agreed to be my appointee, and she brings a lifetime of work around civil rights and justice and mental health issues. And I think she'll be a superb participant in that process, and I hope we get additional nominations and suggestions of people that are willing to make the deep commitment to that work. It's been quite an extraordinary hearing, and I appreciate, again, everyone's time and commitment. Aye.
Novick?
I appreciate everybody's testimony. I appreciate the report. I think that although there could be more detail in the items of the report, I think it raises a number of interesting issues. One, I just want to touch on a couple of them. One, referring back to the previous conversation, I think between Mr. Handelman and the mayor, I think the mayor has actually made it very publicly clear that he's concerned about using hard gear and military-style clothing equipment unless it is absolutely necessary. And I realize that the phrase absolutely necessary might seem vague to some people, but I think that to lay out some specific types of instances and say, here's where it might be necessary, would be a useful clarification. One thing, the recommendation I thought was interesting was number 8, publicize crowd expectations. PBB should publicize information about how it responds to crowds' conduct by utilizing social media, internet sites, and other outlets to reach the community. The work group believes this information might help avoid possible future conflicts if it's clear and available ahead of time. That strikes me as a very reasonable proposal. And I would imagine it might be, I mean, if they haven't already done this, but even if they have, it might be useful to revisit it. It might be a good exercise for the police bureau to go through, saying what do we want to tell people about what we do in terms of managing crowds. And I don't know whether anybody who's it might wind up being part of a crowd would read the information distributed. It would be very nice to know that it's there. So again, I do think that these are high-level recommendations, but I really appreciate the work that went into them. Aye.
Hales.
Well, I appreciate folks' testimony very much. I've now been commissioner in charge of the Police Bureau for a little more than 2 years. During that time, I've seen some wonderful things that I go out of my way to praise, officers who've